The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Rupert Murdoch and his son Lachlan are taking on three of Rupert's other children in a momentous court battle over the future of his media empire. The case will decide who controls Murdoch's family trust after he's gone and which of his children will have major voting rights in his companies, including Fox News and News Corp. Now, the hearing to settle the dispute is being held in private at the Washoe County Courthouse in Reno, Nevada, in spite of attempts from news agencies to be granted reporting rights. Larry Donnelly, law lecturer at the University of Galway and columnist for thejournal.ie, is going to provide us with more insight. Larry, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
First question, why is this behind closed doors? Why is it in camera?
Well, Nevada, the way this is taking place, actually has made itself available as a forum for secrecy. So that these debates, these hearings can be had without any media scrutiny. The media petitioned indeed to be there to hear what's going to be said and what's going to happen, but they were denied. And this is something Nevada, I suppose, has become a forum that families and others who want to settle these sorts of disputes privately without media intrusion have taken on. And what we're seeing here really is, you know, what is going to happen with the Murdoch media empire? And I think the interesting point here is the Murdoch siblings, they're not fighting here about money. They're fighting about control. That is, who is going to control the trust and have a voting say in the running in the day-to-day operations of Fox News and other Murdoch media organs.
Now, for Rupert Murdoch himself, it's almost like he's attending his own funeral, isn't it? Because all of this will play out after he dies. And he had made a will where he laid out the way he thought it was going to be, and then he changed his mind.
Yeah, you know, in a way, truth really is stranger than fiction. What's happened here is four of his children, he does have two other younger daughters, but four of his children were each to have a vote, that is, in how the trust operated and how the media organizations pivoted in future. What Rupert Murdoch is really aghast at, I think, is that three of those children are all more moderate than he is politically. Indeed, one of them, James, has endorsed Kamala Harris and made a lot of contributions to Democratic candidates. Lachlan, who is, I suppose, the chosen one, he shares his father's hard right-wing views and wants Fox News and the other organs to retain that sort of right-wing slant. And Rupert Murdoch actually has a reasonably good argument, I think, in the circumstances. He needs to demonstrate that he's acting in good faith and for the benefit of the trust. And, you know, in terms of acting in good faith, he does seem to, he wants his son, who he trusts the most, to have operations, and that's fair enough. But in terms of acting for the benefit of the trust, if you look, Pat, at the numbers for Fox News, for instance, as compared to MSNBC or CNN, you know, Fox News dwarfs both of those. And if we're talking about the financial benefit of the trust, it would seem to me that Lachlan has a good argument to say that, look, if we move to the center, if we move to the left, we're going to lose an awful lot of the viewers who tune into us because we provide a very different slant on the news. As such, my siblings who might move away from that could damage the trust and hurt our financial interests in future. So it's a very, very interesting argument he's making.
It's a very interesting intersection between business and politics, because Lachlan and therefore his dad, Rupert, are saying, listen, we have a particular and quite biased spin on what's going on. I mean, they say they have a particular view and this view is worth money.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing. You know, when you talk about in an ad hoc sense and winning this legal battle, I think they have a strong argument. But as you indicate, they are effectively setting out their stall. They're not trying to hide it. Fox News' slogan used to be, you know, fair and objective, and, you know, you get to all sides. They're in this case, and again, we're not going to hear all the details, but the rumor is that their argument is we are very much embracing the idea that we are of the right, that ours is a right-wing slant, not just in Fox News, but in the other Murdoch media organs. And they're putting that out there. And how that will play in the longer term will be interesting to see. But I suppose, Pat, in one sense, you could just say they're ending the charade. They're ending any pretense that they're fair and balanced when they're actually of the right.
Now, what are the other assets that are in play here?
Well, there's a number of, other media, newspapers and all sorts of other entities that are out there. Obviously, there's a vast empire. I mean, we're talking billions and billions of assets with a huge reach, not just in the United States, but globally. So the Murdoch family, wields tremendous influence on people's views and everything else around the world. So this is why this is such a significant hearing in so many ways. And again, we know so little. We can't penetrate or analyze what's going on in the courtroom because it's all behind closed doors. So I think it's really a case of wait and see.
Now, we often associate Sky News with Rupert Murdoch, but that's no longer part of the Murdoch family.
No, not as far as I know. This hearing really is centered on Fox News, seems to be what all the focus is. But of course, there are newspapers and other organs that the Murdochs control.
And so the Wall Street Journal, the New York Post, the Sun, the Times and the Sunday Times in the UK among the publications that are in the family.
Yeah, absolutely. And it should be noted that just to take, for instance, the Wall Street Journal and the New York Post, I mean, those are hugely influential publications with very different markets. The Wall Street Journal obviously would be aimed at, financiers and people who work in investment banking, moneyed people, essentially, but a generally conservative audience. And they have great scale to form opinions and to put that message out there. Likewise, at a different level with the New York Post, which really is the conservative blue-collar newspaper, not just for New York, but increasingly circulated around the United States, and it has a massive reach. It influences an awful lot of people who are the unlikely Trump voters. That is, white working-class Americans would tend to read things from the New York Post.
Now, the association of his publications with the Republican Party, and really the Republican Party of Donald Trump, if Trump loses in November, and if the Republican Party grows a pair and gets rid of him, what then for the direction of Fox News and similar publications?
It's a great question, because what seems to have really driven the three dissenting siblings here very, very angry has been the Fox News in particular, their kid gloves treatment of Donald Trump. If Trump does lose, what stance those organs are going to take in the event that it is Lachlan who takes over, what stance they are going to take on the Republican Party and its future vis-a-vis Trump will be fascinating to watch. Because again, a lot of the adherents, a lot of the people who watch Fox News have a personal fidelity to Donald Trump, not just to his message. So will the Murdoch outlets, will they sort of endorse a, thank you, Mr. President, you served us well. It's time to move on to a new generation, a Trumpism without Trump, if you will. Or are they going to say, look, Trump still has a message. He's still there. We're still with him in the event that Trump wishes to cling on and still remain a power player in the Republican Party.
And on the subject of the election, Larry, how are you reading the tea leaves at the moment?
Well, it's interesting. Again, we've had another assassination attempt, which is deeply worrying at all sorts of levels. And again, I think the Secret Service is going to come under scrutiny. On the one hand, there's only so much they can do. But on the other, this guy who seems to be a real crank got awfully close to the president, President Donald Trump. So, I think there are some questions to be answered. The other thing is, in the wake of what was a very, very good debate for Kamala Harris, it is fascinating to note that there hasn't been huge momentum shift in the polls. We now have a number of polls that are out there, and they're showing that, yes, perhaps it helped her a little bit, but not the huge kind of swing, or not the palpable swing that she and her team might have been hoping for. And if that's symbolizes anything, it is that so many Americans are hard fast that they're on one side or the other, and nothing is going to change their minds. So it really is going to come down to a very, very small, infinitesimal percentage of the American electorate who are going to decide this thing. And the race remains very close.
Now, I remember a bit of name dropping from me, Larry, talking to President Bill Clinton about his general well-being. He had put on a lot of weight and then he lost a lot of weight. And I told him he looked very trim. This was at a function in Trinity College. And he said, well, when I was in the White House, there were two things. One was the White House pastry chef who was doing me harm. And he said, the other thing, I used to jog every day. And then some guy opened fire on the White House from Pennsylvania Avenue. And the Secret Service said, came to me and said, look, Mr. President, you have to give up this jogging on the public streets. We cannot protect you from lunatics like this. So he stopped jogging, and therefore that added a few kilos to his weight. And I'm wondering, will the Secret Service at any point say to Donald Trump, even as candidate rather than president, say to him, look, you can't keep going, putting yourself in harm's way like this. You've got to be responsible about your own actions.
Yeah, it's a really good point. That's a really interesting anecdote about Bill Clinton, because I think a lot of us are inclined to, you know, instinctively jump to blame the Secret Service and say, how the hell did this happen? Without ever saying that perhaps the president or former president has a duty to take care for his own safety and well-being. In terms of Trump, I mean, trying to get a, you know, restrain him from doing the things he does, I think it's damn near impossible. I suppose they could appeal to perhaps whose family. I know his son, Donald, was saying that he had to explain to his grandchildren why people want to kill their grandfather, et cetera. Whether any of them can inveigh upon Donald Trump to, you know, stop being so public and doing all the things that he does, some of which is entirely unnecessary. That's one thing. But do I think that they can prevail upon him? No, I don't. And one thing I think it's worth noting, and perhaps it's an anecdote for me because I'm a golfer. The one thing about Donald Trump is it is absolutely extraordinary the amount of golf this guy gets to sneak in. It is something else to see.
It's extraordinary being a president and spending your time watching television, eating junk food and playing golf. That's the way to run a country. Larry Donnelly, law lecturer at the University of Galway, columnist for thejournal.ie. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Pat.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.